Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, boys and girls, to another edition of the FootballDiehards.com podcast. Got some technical difficulties starting out, but we're here for you, and we got lots of stuff to talk about. Got some special stuff going on today. Going to go ahead and go into the news and views, as we usually do with Senior Editor Bob Harris, but we also got Joe Hebert to go ahead and come in and talk about some rankings. How we doing, fellas?
I'm doing good.
Awesome, awesome. Well, let's go ahead and get started off with some of the news that's happened this past week. The biggest story probably being the Eli Manning contract. He's just getting ungodly money now. What do you think about that, Bob?
Yeah, you know, it's big news, but it's really no news at all. I mean, everyone knew he was going to get a new deal. I guess, you know, I don't know that anyone really thought he was going to be, if not the highest paid player in the league, very close to it. But you know what? Eli is steady. The Giants are successful. It's a $97 million deal, roughly $15.3 million per year. That's a lot of money, more than his brother. I'm sure that makes for interesting dinner table chatter.
Yeah, well, they certainly, either one of us could pick up a tab anytime they wanted. Is that any surprise to you at all, Joe?
I guess not. I think the Giants are just so grateful for him to get that championship a couple years ago that, you know, they're willing to pay. In my mind, I think they're overpaying, but, you know, at the same time, contracts keep going up, and it's just a matter of when it's your turn in the cycle to get your money. It always seems like you're getting too much, and 3 years from now we'll probably be saying, gee, he's really underpaid, who knows?
Well, you know, that Manning name really, too, does command the money. What were we going to say, Bob?
I think, you know, with the Giants, you know, you look at some of the more successful franchises, and they go about doing things a certain way, and it's a rather conservative approach, but it works for teams like New England. I think with Tom Coughlin running the Giants, they're taking that same approach. If you have a guy in there that you're confident in and you feel comfortable with and he's not going to hose you, and I think sometimes that's the biggest, you know, the biggest deal, a guy who's not going to hose you. And I'm pretty sure Eli Manning is not going to hose you, even if he doesn't win you a ton of games.
Who do you think the next major quarterback is really in line to be getting a big contract and getting some good money?
I think it's going to be a waiting match now between Rivers and Jay Cutler. They both want new deals. It's kind of ironic that their nemesis for each other are waiting to see who, you know, I think whoever goes last is going to try and, you know, leverage all both of these contracts into the bigger deal. So it may take a little while to get these done, but both guys will get done, and they are coming. The Bears have a lot of cap money right now. They may move a little faster, but it may be a waiting game to see, you know, see who can hold off the longest and get the most leverage.
When do you think we might see that deal come down the pike?
You know what? It could be, in either case, I mean, I think whether it happens during the season, if it doesn't happen during this season, you'll see it next offseason.
Very good, very good. Some other stories making headlines is Michael Crabtree may actually be considering sitting out this year in hopes of re-entering next year's draft, that kind of going into the fact that he's not getting the money he thinks he deserves. What do you think about that, Bob?
You know, I hope that's not the case. I mean, his agent, certainly there's pretty credible reporting out there that he's made the threat that he'll sit out all year. Crabtree's cousin said, yes, we are prepared to do it. So it's obviously out there. They're trying to leverage it. They feel like he's a better player than Darius Hayward Bay, and, hey, maybe he is, but he was drafted after him. And what they're trying to do would obviously, you know, they want to kind of go work around the slotting system the NFL has relied on to pay rookies, first-round picks anyhow. You know, number one gets so much, then number two gets a little less, then number three gets a little less. And Crabtree, thinking he's a top five player, would like not to get paid number 10 money, and thinks he should be paid more than number seven, who is Hayward Bay. And I don't think the Niners are really going to do that, and I'm not sure how smart it would be to sit out the whole year. I'm not sure he'd come back and be the best receiver in the draft next year either. So it doesn't seem like a good plan for me. Holdouts never seem like a good plan for me. They often work for running backs and without doing much damage. But with receivers and other position players, it's just too hard to get up to speed, and you're missing out and on preparation time and the time you need to get to work your way into an immediate contributing role. The holdout immediately decreases your value to the team and to fantasy owners. I hate them.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like it is Hayward Bay that kind of messed everything up for Crabtree in terms of the money. Going into the season, I mean, the only person who really thought that Darius Hayward Bay was better than Michael Crabtree was Al Davis. So
yeah, you know, and that, we've seen that before too. So it's no surprise that Al Davis would go out and grab the guy that would put the monkey into the, you know, throw the wrench into the whole thing. So I don't know if Crabtree actually sits out this year. I think it will be one of the more asinine maneuvers I've seen in recent memory. I just can't imagine it happening.
Joe, what's your take on that?
I'm right there. I think it's really stupid. Now, last year, the Niners probably would be more likely to be willing to give because their wide receiver group was so much less talented. But they've they've made some significant additions this year, and they really don't need him as badly as he thinks they need him. So, I mean, the other funny thing about this is, you know, his agent is Eugene Parker, who also represented Jackson, the Chiefs defensive end, who went earlier in the draft. And what was surprising about that pick was, you know, everybody thought he was overdrafted, but, you know, his agent has no problem sliding his client in where he was drafted there versus here, where he's saying, no, my client deserves much more. So, you know, the client does what the agent does what he can for each individual client, but it really looks two-faced, you know, when you consider those two things.
Imagine that, an agent being two-faced. Who would have guessed?
That's just incredible. I mean, they say one thing on their Twitter and they do something different.
Imagine
never
that.
Horrible. How long do you think?
Casino.
How long do you think they have before we're going to see a decision there? How long does Michael have till he needs to make that call?
You know, I don't see either side really pushing the issue that much. I mean, at this point, it seems he's already missed a week of installation and stuff. He'll have to spend some time crying because Mike Singletary seems to get in his head pretty quickly. I don't know. I think it's already a disaster. So whenever it gets done, he's going to be behind the curve. He's an athletic guy. Maybe they can get him in, you know, trying to work him into, you know, some minimal packages, you know, and try and get him up to speed on some packages. And it just limits him. So right now at this point, even if it got done tomorrow, you know, it's hurt him some. And I'm not sure it really, as a fantasy prospect, he may be one of those guys I'm letting somebody else be the hero on.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's also been a couple of quarterback battles shaping up over the past week. Now that camps are fully open, we're able to see some of these players throwing the ball, running around, seeing how they're doing. How are things shaping up in New York with the Jets, Joe?
You know, it looks like the rookie Mark Sanchez is starting to, you know, close whatever gap was there, whether it was real, imagined, or just, you know, advertised. Kellen Clemens is the veteran. He obviously went in as the starter. But everything you're hearing from, you know, the momentum has shifted. Let's put it that way. Sanchez has just been a little bit sharper, and considering that, you know, Kellen Clemens has time in the offense, a little more experience on him, not necessarily starting experience, but just understanding the scheme, you know, that it's already, you know, the perception that Sanchez has taken over, I think it's the inevitable is coming.
Absolutely. I'm assuming that Kellen Clemens is able to go ahead and stay in there and hold out, is he going to be able to be a role model and a real good mentor for Sanchez? I mean, is Clemens that guy?
You know, he is a good guy. He's a team first guy, very religious guy. You know, I think he's a even keel guy, no matter how angry he gets or how much he doesn't like it. You know, and he's been through, let's face it, he's been through some pretty, you know, bad situations, Brett Favre showing up on his doorstep, things like that. And so, yeah, I think he'll be fine, and I think he'll deal with it. Even if he opens as a starter and has to, you know, bring in the kid and help the kid take his job, I think he'll be a good trooper and do what's asked of him.
Also in Detroit, we got the quarterback shaping up between another high draft pick and a Dante Culpepper. Who do you think is going to go ahead and win out there?
You know, I keep hoping it's going to be Culpepper. You know, at least early on, I'd like to see, you know, they face some pretty tough teams early on. You'd like to see the, you know, the offensive line get its kinks worked out without, you know, destroying a rookie. I guess maybe it's a Detroit thing. You've seen what's happened when they throw guys in too early there. My guess is, you know, hey, Stafford is making this hard. I mean, he's pushing, but Culpepper's not making it easy either. He's in good shape. He's moving better. Jim Schwartz, the head coach, commented that it's the best he's seen Culpepper move since he was a Viking. Last time he was a Viking, his current Lions coordinator, Scott Linehan, was also there. They did good things together. You know, this one's genuinely too close to call. I think they'd like to lean towards Culpepper, and Stafford's making it very difficult for him to do that.
Well, and it seems like both of them really have an ideal situation they're going to be stepping into. I mean, you win one, two games this year, you're going to already have a marked improvement upon last year.
If you don't get killed in the process, that would be the worry.
It is Detroit, but we'll just go ahead and let that one go. I want to talk about
offensive line is not a strong suit there, and I didn't see a ton of improvement this year. That would be my concern.
Oh, well, that, I guess time will only tell there if they're going to be able to get out of the pocket enough to actually make anything happen, but they're going to need to get some help is what you're telling me.
Yes.
Right. A couple of injuries, too, that have some people maybe worried. Is it Reggie Bush? Is that slowing him down how much, or how healthy is he going to be moving into this preseason?
You know, I just hate to see this. I mean, we've seen it before, Brian Westbrook at times. You know, when you see a guy in camp that has a long history of knee trouble, it's coming off two knee surgeries at various times since, you know, his season ended last year, one of them a microfracture procedure. You hate to see him bothered by swelling the first week of camp. It's very nerve-wracking, and I think, you know, I'm not saying Reggie Bush can't come out and have a really good season. But I think I'm going to put him on my 10-foot pole list right now. Guys, I wouldn't touch yours. And I think that, you know, hey, everyone has value at some point in the draft, and Reggie Bush will have value. For me, that value is falling quickly just because of the worry about it. You know, he's never been a durable guy anyway, and when you go into the season with his issue, it seems like you're asking for trouble to rely on him as a real consistent weapon.
Joe, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I've got to agree with that. I mean, one of the things about Bush is when he's healthy and you have him in a PPR format, the guy's a monster. He's a top 10 player in your league, but it's just impossible to have that kind of faith in him right now to draft him where his talent really puts him. You don't know whether you're going to get him for 16 games or 10 or 5 or less. It's just impossible to gauge, and, you know, it's really frustrating. He says he's healthy, yet he's being held out, and looks like he's not going to play that first preseason game even, and, you know, it's just the signs are going against everything that's being said, so it really puts doubt in your mind.
Another player who has been garnishing some dabs too is Brandon Marshall. He earlier had some holdout type issues where it seemed like he had some contract issues, but he also nursing his hip. Is he going to be healthy?
I think right now it's the hamstring, but I guess what I would think about that is it's some sort of compensation. You know, you see that a lot with guys who are coming off injuries. They compensate for, you know, the thing they're trying to protect, and it ends up tweaking something else, and then one nagging thing leads to another nagging thing. I'm a little worried. I think right now Brandon Marshall sits right alongside Reggie Bush on my 10-foot pole list. I mean, he is going to be he could have a solid season, but you look at the installation time that he's missing, and you know the guys like Jabbar Gaffney who already know the offense. You hear the praise that Eddie Royal's getting from Josh McDaniels. You think he thinks Eddie Royal's going to be a Wes Welker type guy, and hey, you still need your Randy Moss, and Brandon Marshall can still be their version of Randy Moss. But he needs to be healthy. He needs to be on board. He needs to be, you know, running at full speed. And right now, he's none of those things. So, me, I'm smiling if somebody else picks him, and I'm going with value a little bit lower.
Yeah, kind of one of the compounding things here is that he doesn't just have the injury questions. Is he's already kind of had some questions to how devoted he's going to be to that team. So there's a couple of red flags going on there.
Exactly. He's still not happy. He's, you know, lurking underneath all that. And the off-field thing, he's got a hearing this week in Georgia. He may miss the first preseason game because of that rather than his injury issues right now. But, you know, depending on that could go the wrong way, and who knows what could happen. But, you know, there's all these lurking issues with him, the off-field stuff, the fact that he says in a meeting that the owner, Pat Bowlen, gave him, said he would give him a trade if that's what he wanted, and that's what he wants. And at some point, is that going to get ugly? And, you know, it's just, boy, a lot of drama with Brandon Marshall, a lot of drama, where there's a lot of less dramatic players perhaps will be as productive as he.
One player who's also showing some rather dramatic play, this time for the good times, actually Percy Harvin, kind of shutting up everybody about the whole quarterback situation going on in Minnesota. He's doing pretty well so far, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of buzz about him, and I think what I like the best is, when was the last time, until I just now said it, Brett Favre? Did you hear Brett Favre? I mean, who would have thought, if, you know, 2 weeks ago, that if Brett Favre was going to decide not to show up, and they were going to have to go with Tavares Jackson and Sage Rosenfels, and Tavares Jackson gets a sprained knee the first day of camp, and it's kind of in and out, and there's words that we'd be talking about something other than quarterback, but we are. We're talking about how, you know, guys like Adrian Peterson thinks he's, you know, that's the key, going to be the key to the offense. And you hear teammates saying he's faster than Adrian Peterson, and that the combination of him, Bernard Berrien, Sidney Rice, all these guys out there, it's just going to really just change the whole dynamic of the offense. And if that's what we're talking about right now in Minnesota, I think that's a great thing, because I've pretty much talked myself out on the quarterback issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Is Percy Harvin showing some real value in the drafts right now?
You know, I think right now, I mean, you can get him late enough that he may end up being a value. I'm always leery of rookie receivers, but he may be in that special category of player where he's not really a true receiver. His versatility is going to make him more of a weapon, and he's going to be able to get out in different packages and not necessarily be stuck receiver, where some of these guys have, you know, a tough transition coming in. Maybe his transition will be a little easier because they'll be using him in such unique ways. He'll focus on those packages. So I kind of have high hopes for him, actually.
Yeah, he's certainly turning some heads right now. And speaking of kind of values, we're getting into the time of the year. People are starting to get their drafts lined up and looking at a bunch of numbers, a bunch of rankings. Want to kind of break down some of the players that are moving up and down in the list. And starting off with quarterback, Joe, who's really surprising people right now in terms of being really, really high value?
To me, the person that's surprising me the most for value is probably Romo out in Dallas, who's currently going as the seventh quarterback off the board typically and a 12-team draft at about position the ninth pick of the fourth round. And the reason to me for that is, you know, when you look at the Dallas team, that team just screams to me as a team that wants to run the ball. I mean, that's where their primary talent is. They don't really know what they have in Roy Williams. They certainly hope they have a stud wide receiver one there, but I don't think they can be certain of that. And certainly they know what they have in Jason Witten and possibly the best tight end in the game. But, you know, when you have Choice and Jones and Barber in that backfield, if it's me, I'd be more than happy to call 70% runs and, you know, keep that defense off the field and control the ball and win the games that way. So if that happens, and that's what makes the most sense to me, and that's what Wade Phillips really wants to do with his offense, even though Jason Garrett wants to run a little bit more balanced offense, then it's going to affect Romo's numbers. And from a fantasy point of view, you know, I think he's going to be hard to justify up there.
Well, Bob, who's one of your favorite quarterbacks that's going late right now?
You know, I look at guys like Matt Hasselbeck, this guy I've been getting as my backup. You know, if you look at the average draft position right now, he's down to 16th among quarterbacks going in like the ninth round. I love him. I like Carson Palmer, too, I think, you know, is the 12th on the average draft list right now. I think, you know, you can get him maybe almost as your second quarterback, depending on your draft. In a recent draft, I got Matt Ryan, I think, you know, maybe around round 7, and then I came back around and I got Palmer real quick. I think that's a real solid duo, and you can kind of get him in the middle rounds, pick up your running back, get a stud or two at receiver, and then pick up your quarterbacks a little later and still get solid guys. And if Palmer turns back into Carson Palmer, then heck, you're way ahead of the game there. And I think the same with Hasselbeck. You know, I know he's getting a little older, the offense is changing, but I think they may be doing some things that suit him a little better and maybe get a little better in the red zone. He'll be a viable option as long as he remains healthy. So I think he's a great pickup, you know, the 16th overall. If you get him as your backup, I think you could have a lot of upside there and perhaps a possible starter at some point.
Now, Jay Cutler's currently coming off 9 off the list, somewhere in the 6th round, around the 11th pick, too. Is there a lot of value there? I mean, there's a lot of question marks also with Kyle Orton averaging the 18th off the board. Are either of those quarterbacks going to provide any real value? I mean, there's just so much question with them right now.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of question. So I'm in sort of a wait-and-see mode on a guy like Cutler, who I'm not sure if he's going to be a quarterback one or not. So to me, I'd rather get him, you know, as the somewhere in maybe the 12th to 14th quarterback off the board. You know, I don't necessarily want to see him as the ninth off the board. I'd much rather take a chance on Matt Schaub, who's currently coming off the board as the 11th quarterback. And, you know, last year when he played, he was putting up top five numbers. The only reason his overall ranking fell was due to injuries. So, you know, if you get a solid backup behind him, like Bob was talking about, if you could pair a Hasselbeck behind Schaub, I think that's a great quarterback combo to lead you to, you know, some mega points out of your quarterback position without spending high-value picks on it.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be your key on some of these guys. You look at Orton, I mean, the ADP of 18 right now, I do think he'll outperform that. I don't know by how much, but, you know, if you take a little bit of a risk with your first guy, or you go a little early and you're not comfortable with, maybe you got Romo, and you want to get wait till late and you're building your team around him, I think Orton's a good backup, a solid guy to get late and, you know, just hold off, not worry about, you know, the position for a while. Between him and Cutler, I think Cutler has a good chance to be a QB1, but it's going to depend on his ability to make the receivers there better and take advantage of the talent on hand. I mean, if they keep Matt Forte in the passing attack a lot, Greg Olsen emerges as the kind of threat they think he will. I think Cutler could be a QB1, and I think that's maybe a reasonable ranking for him. But he was not a guy I would draft. I would let somebody else draft him, and I would be looking for down the list a little bit of guys like Ryan, Schaub too, and Palmer.
Joe, what about at the running back position? Anybody who's getting really good value right now who's being ranked lower than you think they should be?
For me personally, I'm big on the Chris Johnson bandwagon this year. And I've currently got him ranked as my third best running back in a PPR scoring type situation. But he's currently coming up the board at number 6, and to me that represents some pretty good value. I've been able to snag him in two different leagues now at the number 5 slot, and I've been more than happy with that. I'm really extremely pleased. And, you know, I think the Titans are going to be a little bit different team than what people think they are. With Haynesworth out of that defense, I don't think they're going to shut down teams as much as they have in the past. They'll still be good but not great. And so I think that offense in Tennessee is going to need to put up more points this year, and that means they're probably going to need to throw the ball. And, you know, it looks like Johnson's going to be a big part of that. And, in a PPR league, I can see him catching 50 balls and still, you know, putting up 1,200 yards on the ground as well. And if he gets any decent type of numbers in the red zone for touchdowns, you know, all of a sudden, you know, my number three ranking could come to fruition.
Bob, who are you looking at right now for some good value?
My man crush is about to show. Steven Jackson's my guy. I mean, right now, you've got an ADP of 7. In this format, I could go with him first. I could make that. I could talk myself into that. You know, he's going in. They brought in the West Coast offense. Steve Spagnuolo and Pat Shurmur from the quarterback coach from Philadelphia is now the offensive coordinator. I think they're going to throw the ball a lot. I don't think you're going to see him, you know, duplicate the 2006 90 catch season, but he could get 60 catches easy, and they're going to rely on him heavily in the running game. The big concern with him is, can he take, you know, give you the full 16 games? He hasn't done that for a little while, and it is a concern. I'm going to go into this season, assuming he can, following him through the offseason. I know he put in a lot of work, a lot more work than he has in the past. You know, last year kind of focused on the contract more than on the getting ready. So I'm thinking this is a rebound year for him. So I think he's the big value pick for me.
All right, moving on to wide receiver. Joe, I want to get your take on who's getting really good value right now.
I would say that of everybody on there, I'm going to go with Jennings up in Green Bay. He's currently coming off the board as the ninth receiver in the draft at about the 11th pick in the second round. But for me personally, in the PPR format, I've got him as a top five receiver. I've actually got him sitting as my third receiver. And, you know, I've pulled the trigger on him in situations much closer up to in that 3 to 5 range. And, you know, I've certainly heard a few comments on that saying, wow, you probably could have waited on him. And maybe I could, maybe I couldn't. But, you know, I'm willing to go with my draft positions and you know, just go and reference what ADP is rather than stick straight with ADP and use that as my sole reference. So, I mean, you know, James has a new contract, and in spite of that, he seems to have worked harder than ever to get himself ready for this season. And I love his work ethic. I love Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback, and, you know, that offense is going to need to throw a lot because that new 3-4 defense, I don't think is going to get off the ground with a running start. And they may have to put up 24, 27 points a game to be in it. So, you know, I love the value of Jennings, and I'm more than pleased to grab him as a wide receiver one.
Yeah, one of the names that's just blowing my mind, though, is coming off 15 with the ADP is Terrell Owens. I mean, he's always best in his first year of a new contract, so I'm sure he's going to catch 50 touchdowns this year. Bob, what do you think?
You know, I think, again, there's always uncertainty for me for guys going into new teams with new situations. Owens' history is good going to new teams. He always does good in that first year, and he always does good in years where he has to prove himself, and this is one of those. There's other weapons there. I think he's a pretty good value as the 15th receiver off the board in the PPR format, but I wouldn't be targeting him so much. I think a lot of the value I like here, and I do agree with something Joe brought up, you know, use the ADP as a tool. You know, you use your rankings and the ADP. Maybe you have a guy that you think is a top 10 guy, but he's going down lower. You just don't have to draft him as high as you want. But if you want a player, you know, you need to get that player. You have to go after him. You can't wait until the ADP. So, you know, you kind of use it as a tool, a guideline, but there's always going to be differences. But when I look at, like, the average draft list at wideout, some of the things that really jump out at me are down towards the bottom where you have, like, Morgan from San Francisco coming up at number 58 among all receivers. This is a guy that could, you know, suddenly explode as a top 20 receiver. Certainly looks like he's in line to be San Francisco's number one receiver. And I also think Nate Burleson, especially in non-PPR leagues, you know, he's kind of a scoring threat. But here's a guy that's coming off an ACL that he suffered last September. By all accounts, he's looking very good in camp. The knee isn't an issue at all. And I think he's a guy that could really surprise people. And here he is available as the 68th back on the ADP. I think that's pretty good value. I think overall, when I'm drafting right now and all the mocks I'm in, receiver is a position I'm not worried about. And it's for these guys like that, when you got guys like Morgan and Burleson, you know, available in the last round of your draft almost, you know, or beyond round 15, that is fantastic value to me. That's a good risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Finally, I want to go ahead and touch on some of the tight ends who are movers and shakers. Bob, who do you think is getting the best value right now off the tight end board?
You know, I keep looking at someone like, you know, Zach Miller, who you know, one could easily argue is the best wide receiver in Oakland or the most proven wide receiver. He catches the ball pretty deep, you know, gets down the middle of the field pretty well. Still some question marks. You hear good things about Chaz Schillens, another value pick at receiver. I think you can get him very late also. But, I think that's a guy that's maybe flying under the radar. You can wait on a little bit. I also like John Carlson in Seattle. I think he's going to be very solid in the PPR. He's going off ninth. I think that's a little low. I would take him higher than that. And Greg Olsen, we talked about earlier. I mean, there's a good opportunity for him to be the leading receiver in Chicago. Now, he's current ADP is 6. That doesn't mean you can wait that long to get him. But, you know, I think he's a guy who could come up and finally break into the top 5. There's your gamble, though, the waiting, you know, your expectation versus everyone else's expectation. It's hard to gauge that in your league. So if you really want a guy like Olsen, you may have to jump up and get him.
Joe, what do you think?
I think Bob pretty much nailed it with all those people. Another value who I think, even though he's coming off third on the board for tight ends, is Gonzalez in Atlanta. He's coming off, you know, in the 5th round is the 8th pick, and I still think he holds just as much value as ever to have the possibility to grab 90 balls and get 7 to 10 touchdowns. And, you know, I think all the talk coming out of Atlanta about him being there, you know, mostly to help with that line and help with blocking, I think that's really helping his value in these drafts. I think when push comes to shove, the Atlanta team is going to have to score more points this year than last year, and I don't think they're going to be as effective running the ball as they were last year. And, you know, with Ryan developing there as a quarterback, it makes a lot of sense that Gonzalez is in line to, you know, along with White, to have significant statistical year. And, you know, I like him a lot. And in fact, in one league, I got him as a second tight end behind Witten because I could actually use the tight end as a wild card slot in a flex position. So, you know, I've got both of them, and you know, I automatically have a great backup tight end in addition to being able to actually play one of them at flex, which I intend to do. And for me personally, I like that move. You know, others may think that's crazy, and I can certainly see that point of view, but, you know, I'm willing to go with it. I think it can work out.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe, overall, what's been surprising so far this year in the drafts? What position are you seeing drafting earlier or later, or where are you able to hold off and get some good positions? I mean, we were talking about tight ends a little earlier and being able to pick up Gonzalez or Gates in the 5th round sounds like a pretty good value to me. What are the types of things that you're seeing?
Well, one of the other things I'm seeing is when I looked at ADP data, you know, we talked about the PPR side of things here, but I also looked at the non-PPR side, and what I was shocked by was how almost identical they are, and so I'm left to wonder if, you know, if fantasy owners are doing enough to differentiate their draft list between their PPR leagues and their non-PPR leagues, because it looks like they're not. I mean, the data was almost identical. And so my advice to everybody is, you know, consider the rules of your league. And, you know, if the rules are different for scoring, you know, go ahead and take the time to create a new list and make sure you're ready for your scoring for your league to take advantage of what you can, because it looks like people are just not doing that.
What are some of the things people aren't paying attention to in terms of drafting from a non-PPR league versus a regular PPR league?
I think in general, you know, obviously when you take away the points per catch, you know, you're left with, you know, what is your overall yardage and what is your likelihood of scoring touchdowns. And, you know, it totally changes the game. It becomes, you know, not just about touches, but about how effective you are on the field. And so, you know, people need to take it into account, you know, explosive players or players who, you know, are sort of red zone specialists. Their value would move up in a non-PPR league. So you could take somebody like, say, a T.J. Duckett, who maybe won't go very high in a PPR league at running back, but in a non-PPR league, if he's going to be getting the red zone touches in Seattle, and it looks like maybe even a little bit more, you know, his value slides up, and you have to be aware of that and be able to capitalize on that.
Absolutely. Well, anything else going on this weekend, guys? Anything exciting in football?
I think we got a game coming up for the first NFL game of the season. Has me a little bit intrigued, not totally excited. The Hall of Fame festivities, always joyous. You know, it's this first weekend, this Hall of Fame weekend is always, you know, gets the blood flowing, lets everyone know that fantasy football is about to crank up. Always a good feature, too. Hopefully we'll get someone to come up with a Michael Irvin-esque type thing that gets us all stirred and emotional. It's going to be great. We also, of course, if you hit the site, you'll want to check out the premium content is up and running, the August update. We've got rankings. We've got all kinds of discussions going on, all kinds of updates going on, 50, 60 updates a day. So check it out. Sign in. Use your magazine codes if you didn't already do it and get your free content. And otherwise,
more information than you could possibly even digest. Well, this has been the FootballDiehards.com podcast. Thanks so much to Joe Hebert for joining us, and as always, Bob Harris, senior editor of FootballDiehards.com. Next week, we'll be talking some football. We'll be able to run down a little bit about what happened, so we're excited about that. Till next week, this has been the FootballDiehards.com podcast.